1 Corinthians chapter 10. Paul has been discussing an issue that we took a break from last week, but the issue of what do we do about food that's been sacrificed to idols. He concludes his instruction in the second half of chapter 10. So today we're going to be starting in verse 23 and going through the chapter, and we're going to tag chapter 11 verse 1 on, because that's where his discussion actually ends. So hopefully you have found your way to 1 Corinthians 10, and with a copy of God's word in front of you, you can read along silently as we listen together to the word of God. Everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissible, but not everything is constructive. Nobody should seek his own good, but the good of others. Eat anything sold in the meat market without raising questions of conscience. For the earth is the Lord's, and everything in it. If some unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you without raising questions of conscience. But if anyone says to you, "This has been offered in sacrifice," then do not eat it, both for the sake of the man who told you and for conscience sake. The other man's conscience, I mean, not yours. For why should my freedom be judged by another's conscience? If I take part in the meal with thanksgiving, why am I denounced because of something I thank God for? So, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church of God. Even as I try to please everybody in every way, for I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. For every complex question, there is a simple answer that happens to be wrong. When I was a little boy, I listened to a man on the radio late at night on KMOX, because I was a weird little kid listening to talk radio, and his name was Jim White. And for long-term St. Louisans, you might even have seen bumper stickers that say, "You can't fix stupid." That's Jim White. But another thing he said was, for every complex question, there truly is a simple answer that happens to be wrong. And that doesn't mean that every simple answer is wrong, but there's always a simple answer that is wrong. And I couldn't help but think about that when we come to the question at hand, because the people of Corinth asked a very simple question. They asked a complex question. They didn't know it was complex. They thought it was a simple question. They said, what do we do about meat that's been sacrificed to idols? Meat sacrificed to elders would be truly weird. What do we do about meat that's been sacrificed to idols? And Paul has spent these three chapters giving them a very complex answer, but an important answer. Let's review just a little bit. What do we do about meat sacrificed to idols? Answer one from chapter 8 is don't go in and eat in the temple. So regarding food sacrificed to elders, don't go in and eat it in the temple. I did it again. This could become a problem for the rest of this sermon. It's stuck in my head wrong. Okay. Okay, idols. He explains that doing that, going into the temple and eating it that way, could lead to the destruction of a weaker brother or sister. It could harm those who are weaker by going into the temple and doing this. That was the message of chapter 8. Chapter 9, Paul urges us to be willing to lay down our rights as he has modeled the laying down of rights. Because the question was asked, don't I have the right to eat meat that might have been sacrificed that way? He said, perhaps you do have a right. He says, look at my life. Paul laid down lots of rights for the sake of others, and he was pleased to do it. Then in chapter 9, Paul says, don't go in and eat in the temple. In 9 and 10, we're in chapter 10 now. Don't go in and eat in the temple. And he says, because to do that is idolatry. Okay, so it's the same thing he told them not to do in chapter 8. In chapter 10, he again tells them, don't go in and eat food sacrificed to idols in the temple, because that is idolatry. And what he means by that is to go into that setting would be to engage in the worship that's taking place there. And it would be exposing yourself to other things like temple prostitution that are taking place there. So he says, while you have freedom, and while your actions could harm someone else's conscience, sometimes you don't do it because to do it would be replacing your devotion to Christ in another location. So that was the message of 2 weeks ago, the first half of chapter 10. It says, don't go and celebrate in the temple. And then today, it would be participating in worship. And that's pretty abstract. And I was trying to think, how could we make it contemporary? Now, you confuse the sacrifice with the temple is where the error comes. For example, I like hot wings. Buffalo wings. I enjoy them. There's nothing wrong with hot wings. Buffalo style hot wings. Now it happens that an establishment named Hooters is famous for hot wings. Just because there's nothing wrong with the hot wings doesn't give me freedom to go worship in the temple. That would be out of bounds for me. I hope that makes sense. I hope that brings it into our current culture. You see, for us, just like for them, the issue isn't the meat provided to eat. It's the worship. In our day, we could go and watch people oogle and google and flirt and worship in this unique, ununique, in this way. So you see, we find things that are fine for us, but they can be placed in a context where they're no longer okay. So that was the message of the first half of chapter 10. And now we come to the climax of his message, which is freedom and love, or perhaps better, freedom in love. The freedom to truly exercise love, and a love that constrains some freedoms. freedom constrained by love. He says, everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissible, but not everything is constructive. You see, he's saying we do not have to do things just because they are allowed. We need to go beyond the question of what's allowed to what is good. I want you to think with me for a second. And I want you to think about your weekly routine, the way that you go through your typical week as you live out the life that God has given you. And I want you to ask, where do you need to be restraining your freedom to something that is allowed, but is just not profitable? Okay, track with me. Pay attention, please. What in your week do you maybe need to be putting aside, even though it's allowed, because it doesn't stand up to the test of good, perhaps for you, perhaps for others? I used to be pretty good friends with the dollar menu at McDonald's. We got along real well. And things would come into my mind like, it's just the dollar. I could barely make lunch and put it in a bag for a dollar. But as my metabolism slowed down, and as I put in time working overnights, and my weight continued to push toward that magic 300 number, I realized this was no longer beneficial. It was not an issue of whether it was allowed. It was not an issue of it just was not beneficial. It was not profitable. My cholesterol levels, my blood pressure level, my scale all told me, nope, not profitable for Todd, not for this season of his life. That doesn't mean I never eat at McDonald's. But it does mean I don't let myself get in the habit of McDonald's being my lunch. It's not beneficial for me. It's not profitable for me. So there's the first question as he talks about our freedom. There are things that are permissible that just are not constructive. So I want to ask you again, what is in your week that perhaps you're giving yourself to that is not beneficial and is not constructive? That's application one. Application two says nobody should seek his own good, but the good of others. You see, love sets a new standard. See, verse 24 makes us go back to verse 23 and ask the question, is this beneficial for others? Is this constructive for others? See, the first time I thought about it, I was talking about myself. And then there's a whole category of things that might be not only allowed, might be completely unharmful in any way for me, but could be unbeneficial, unconstructive for others as I do that. So our freedom is constrained by love. Paul is taking us back to chapter 9 and the opportunity that love gives us to lay down our rights for others. So that's the first place that love constrains. Love constrains there first. Next, Paul declares that freedom sets our consciences free. Verse 25 and 26. Eat anything sold in the meat market without raising questions of conscience, for the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Our conscience is free. You see, even everything that is offered in the temple is really God's. And it doesn't cease to be God's just because it was misused. His ownership cannot be undone. So we see that the issue is not the stuff, the issue is not the food, the issue is not the meat. The issue is the way that it is being used. You see, inside the temple, eating it might be worship. Outside the temple, eating it might just be food. So our consciences are truly free. God declares it all belongs to Him. So once we've filtered through the is it beneficial, the answer is do it with a clear conscience. If it's beneficial, if it's constructive. Freedom constrained by love. Paul takes us next to a case study because he wants us to understand what it looks like when freedom is being constrained by love. The example we find in verse 27. If some unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you without raising questions of conscience. So the first thing we find is we're the guest of an unbeliever. Principle one is go. And that's actually amazingly radical. That's amazingly radical that the default position is go ahead and go. Go into this house where generations before you, people would have been afraid they would be defiled because we had to be separate to show that we belonged to God. But Jesus turned that upside down. Jesus caught a lot of heat for violating this very principle. There's an expression of love and acceptance that before the arrival of Jesus would not have been possible. People would have been afraid and assumed they would be defiled by such an invitation. But Paul says, if you want to go, go. Because the gospel has arrived. And then Paul says, eat whatever is offered. And if we think back to our study of Acts, we realize this was such a radical message that God had to come to Peter in his sleep and put him in a trance and give him a supernatural vision to convince him that he could go into the house of a pagan Gentile and he could eat food that previously had been declared unclean. And Peter said, "No, Lord, I will not do such a thing." And God said, "Listen, Peter. If I say it's been clean, it's been made clean." And the church expanded. And most of us are here because Peter was obedient to cross through that barrier. Paul is assuring the church that we still have the freedom. Actually, love compels us to cross that barrier when we have the opportunity to cross that barrier. But by the way, Paul says, you know, don't even ask. Don't even ask. Don't even check to make sure their conscience is in the right place. Because Paul knows that to ask that question would be rude. And love keeps him from even asking that question. You know, it's not exactly in this text, but a principle of love would also say if what is served is Brussels sprouts, and you hate Brussels sprouts, love says, eat the Brussels sprouts. I mean, that's part of the grace of the hospitality. Now, just so I don't get anybody in trouble, if you're not capable of eating Brussels sprouts, because the look on your face would be even more rude than declining them, then simply say, I'm sorry, the texture, I just cannot eat Brussels sprouts. All right? But listen up. You can do that. But if you get called to the culture of Brussels sprouts, you got to work through that texture. Okay? All right? That's how love works. That is a picture of the hospitality being offered and the hospitality graciously being accepted for the sake of the gospel going forward. Man, most of you don't realize how hard that was, but my son Jacob, that was the hardest point he's going to hear all year. If I'd have said beans, that would be the hardest point he would have heard all year. Okay. So that's assumption one. If you don't ask questions, if it's put before you, you eat it. But again, freedom constrained by love. But if anyone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, then do not eat it. That's verse 28. Then do not eat it, both for the sake of the man who told you and for conscience's sake. It could harm him for you to eat it when he sees it as idol worship. The reason it could harm him is it could embolden him to do that, to worship that idol. The other reason is because it could damage his conscience. Now, Paul's careful to point out it's his conscience, it's not your conscience that's in jeopardy, it's his conscience. You see, to run over his conscience that way, to go forward with that declaration, would be to encourage that person to continue in his idolatry, and that would be sin for him. Because as we talked about several weeks ago, if you happen to be here, for one to do something that they consider to be sin is sin, even if it would not be otherwise. Okay? For someone to do something that they consider to be sin is sin, even if it would not have been sin if they didn't consider it to be sin. Okay, because they're rebelling against God in their minds. They think God has told them not to do that, but they do it. So the rebellion is if they're actually breaking the will of God. Therefore, it is sin. Now, last time we talked about this, a clarification question came after the sermon. And I want to take this chance to just make it crystal clear that this does not mean that sin becomes okay if we don't think it's sin. Okay? Do you understand that? It doesn't flow the other way. So if I sincerely think that something is okay, if I can sincerely think that something is not against God's will, and it actually is, I am still responsible for the breaking of God's will. It is still sin. Even if I don't realize that it's sin. So it doesn't work both ways. For example, it is crystal clear from the Word of God that premarital or extramarital sexual activity, even in a culture like ours, that's extremely sexualized, is sin. Sexual activity, outside of marriage is sin. Now, we will find, we will say, we will come up with lots of excuses and lots of rationalizations. Maybe even complete ignorance. I had no idea. But none of those things make it into something other than sin. So, we constrain our freedom out of love so that we won't lead someone else into sin. Paul says, it's the other man's conscience, I mean, and not yours, for why should my freedom be judged by another's conscience? If I take part in a meal with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of something I thank God for? So first of all, Paul makes it very clear that he's speaking of the other person's conscience. And the other person's conscience doesn't change my freedom. It just changes whether or not I need to lay down my freedom or walk in my freedom, exercise my freedom. Okay, but either way, my conscience is still clear, Paul says. The other person's conscience can't change that. Paul gives us a test. And his test is thankfulness. His test is thankfulness. He says, if I can give thanks for something as a gift from God, then I am free to enjoy it. If I can give thanks for something as a gift from God, then I am free to enjoy it. Now, I still might lay it down out of love for the sake of others. But as far as my conscience is concerned, I am free to enjoy it if I can give God thanks for it as a gift coming from Him. Now, my thankfulness cannot make disobedience into obedience. If God has prohibited something, it doesn't matter how thankful I pretend to be. I can't thankfully receive something from God that He has prohibited. My thankfulness can never make something that God has called sin to not be sin. But if I can receive something with thankfulness that God has not prohibited, then I am free to enjoy it. Now, if I can receive something with thanks, then I relate to it in a way that I do not demand it. Okay, so track with me here. If I receive a bagel from the window that's now open on Sunday mornings, even though it hadn't been before, if I can receive that bagel with thanksgiving, then I am free to receive that bagel. But if I demand a bagel, and if I am not going to be satisfied unless my bagel need is met, then I am not receiving a bagel with thanksgiving. I am demanding a bagel. And as silly as it sounds, that bagel has become an idol of my heart. In my foolishness, I am looking to that bagel to give me life. So if I can receive it with thanksgiving, it's a good gift from God. If I demand it, it's no longer a good gift from God. It's strange. strain and showing a disorderedness in my heart that I need to bring back into the Lordship of Christ. When does a good thing like a bagel become an idol? And there are lots of good gifts. When do they become an idol? If I have to have it, it's probably strain into the area of idolatry. If I must possess it, I am probably straying into the area of idolatry. If to be without it feels like death to me, well, then I am trusting it to give me life. At that point, I am now worshiping. At that point, it has become my idol. Question of application for each of us today, and hopefully every day, is what am I relating to this way? What good gift is no longer a gift? What good gift has become my idol? And that's an important conversation to have in prayer before God, because He wants us free. He wants us free so we can walk in His presence, so we can walk in the gospel. It's pretty clear how do we apply it to ourselves. But if we go back into the text, he talks about the way that we have to navigate what may or may not be idols to other people. And so we need to give a little bit of attention to that, because that is this point before we close. If we're going to bring that forward to today, maybe we could ask the question, can I watch college football? Can I watch college football? Sure, you have freedom if you can receive the event as a gift and give thanks for it. Sure you can. You might find it's not beneficial or profitable, and that's the other edge of the thing, but as far as idolatry goes, yes, you are free to. But if college football becomes the thing that you order your life around, and to miss the game would feel like death, you are no longer receiving it as a gift. It is now your idol, just like the bagel was. Just like the meat offered to idols would be if you're viewing it that way. So, what that means is, if you are free to watch college football, to go to the game with someone who has made it clear that it is their worship, the right thing would do would be to lay it down out of love. See? You don't go worship with someone else to encourage their idolatry. You have a clear conscience too, but love constrains our freedom. And we lay it down. And we lay it down. Now, according to the principles of the text, we don't become detectives. We don't go looking for other people's idolatry. It will show itself. And when it shows itself, we lay down our freedom for the benefit of others. So what Paul has been writing about is love in action. He's going to define love for us in a few chapters, he's going to define it. But he has shown us here what love looks like. Love in action. He gives us a recap, I think, to summarize his instruction for this part of his instruction as the gospel goes through this particular field of what do we do in the body of Christ with things that are offered to idols. He says in verse 31, so whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews or Greeks or the church of God. Love God by doing all to the glory of God. Enjoy gifts. Enjoy freedom. Enjoy laying down your rights. Love God by refraining from enjoying gifts when that's what the situation calls for. Love God by suffering. Whatever it is, do it all for the glory of God. That's big application number one. Do it all for the glory of God. Second application we see in verse 32, do not cause anyone to stumble. Love others by not causing anyone to stumble. He says in verse 33, even as I try to please everybody in every way, for I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many so that they may be saved. Love others by seeking their good and not our own. By the way, this is loving God too, because their salvation is His priority. So we don't cease loving God to love others. We love God in yet another way by loving others. Their salvation is indeed His priority. When salvation comes, they become worshipers, capable of living lives to glorify Him. Paul wraps it up with the final application. He says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. The application for us is follow the example of Christ, learning it from those who teach His ways to us. Follow His example. See Him loving. See Him laying down rights. Follow His example.